Military Mondays with David Katz.
We are going to be chatting to Major David Katz and getting a view on the shifting sands of the Middle East. We're going to be chatting to Major David Katz and get his view on that. The other story that's just completely ridiculous, a Business Insider reporting a woman deliberately cut off her hand with a circular saw in a 35 million rand insurance scam. Did you see that story?
I saw that.
Absolutely insane. A Slovenian woman has been sentenced to 2 years in jail after being found guilty of attempting insurance fraud.
Yeah.
She and her boyfriend plotted to deliberately saw off her hand to receive the 1 million euros payout. Absolutely unbelievable. That's according to Sky News. I just keep wondering how that conversation started. How did the boyfriend actually ever raise that?
Why didn't he cut off his hand?
Yeah. Exactly. What kind of a man is he? Time is 8:37. Major David Katz, you would never do. I mean, you'd cut off your own hand, surely, for an insurance scam.
I cut off my hand in an insurance scam? I don't know. No, I don't think so. I'm not that desperate.
For 35 million rand. And the worst part was they left the hand. They said she chopped it off while chopping wood or something, and they left it there, so there was no chance of reconnecting it.
Are you talking dollars or rand?
No, so it was 1 million. They say here 1 million euros. 1 million euros. $1.2 million. Mm. But that's not 35 million. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Either way, sure, it could be. But either way, then they went off to the hospital, and the hospital said, oh no, you don't. Let's try and get hold of that hand and let's see if we can fix it. Not knowing at that stage it was a scam. And, then they went, they found the hand, they managed to reattach it. What of course gave them away was that the boyfriend's internet history. Guys, be careful of your internet history. If I've told you once, I've told you 1,000 times. He was looking for prosthetic hands the day before the accident.
No.
Idiot. I mean, honestly,
you know,
not
gives new meaning to the Old Testament paragraph that says if your right hand offends you, cut it off.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
If it pays you, cut it off.
100%. So how's that for a crazy story? All right, let's talk about what's going on in the Middle East. Phenomenal. It's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I think it's phenomenal. And I had a thought. I was co-hosting a webinar on Iron Dome and sitting and talking to the inventors and the guys who did this most amazing documentary behind the Iron Dome. And I came to a realization. I see the limitations of Iron Dome and what the Israelis tried to do, but I came to a sort of epiphany during this whole webinar about how much pressure the Israeli government finds itself to do something for the people that are in the firing zone in the border areas. And every time they launch a missile attack or put their cannon, blow up a few Gaza installations or whatever, you know, it devalues Israel in the eyes of the foreign press, etc., etc. And this Iron Dome is such an important component in allowing Israel to take defensive measures, not offensive measures, but defensive measures, which allows them to take the sort of passive stance on this whole thing, satisfy the call for these from ordinary Israelis to do something, and also not rock sort of the international boat with taking these actions in Gaza. And I just thought, you know what, this is such an important component in where Israel finds itself today, in that it's sort of enabled it to make these peace deals with not its immediate neighbors, that's already done, but some of the neighbors further afield, some important people out there. And I think it's all part of a strategy. I mean, I saw it like that. It's all part of a strategy which allows Israel to make these peace deals. That's what came to me during this webinar.
Why do you think this has happened now? Because what's fascinating to me is when you've got the UAE, you've got Bahrain, looks like Oman as well as potentially Morocco, Saudi maybe a little bit further down the line.
And Sudan teetering and maybe coming in, yeah.
Exactly. All of a sudden, everybody, I think, looks at it and says, but hold on a minute. If all these other countries have these great relationships with Israel, what on earth is going on there? Why can't there be peace? It's almost like hatred becomes so last year.
Yeah, it's sort of when those scales tip. You know, you put that little piece on the scale and it tips and all of a sudden things become apparent that it's tipping that way, and it's something seems to be happening out there. And you ask why this is happening, and I think it's a number of factors. And I spoke about now Iron Dome, even the wall that the Israelis have built to keep out the suicide bombers. It's a defensive measure. It's a passive measure, and it doesn't offend anybody really. I mean, there was a lot of bad press about it, but nobody sort of died in the construction of the wall, and it's keeping the terrorists out, and it's allowing Israel the space, I think, to make these peace deals. The same with Iron Dome. It's a passive defense system. It's allowing the space. So there's that factor. I think Israel has actively taken on a defensive stance lately. I think we see that the reprisals against Gaza and all these type of things have sort of slowed down. And it's allowed Israel the space now to do these type of deals. That's the one component. The other component, obviously, is I think the United States is playing an active role. In my opinion, one of the few things that Trump has done correct in this area is facilitated this process, and he's created the climate where there's facility for this type of thing to happen. So there's that factor. And then, of course, there's the huge factor with Iran. Iran has polarized the region, and all the Iranian allies are sort of coming in behind Iran. And Israel has become an important part of those opposing Iran. And, of course, the big factor is Saudi Arabia. Once Saudi Arabia comes over, and there's a reasonable chance of that happening, then you know that this peace process is on the right footing, and there's momentum behind it. I think Saudi Arabia is the key to what's going on here. And I think these are testers. The UAE and Bahrain and places like that are just testers for Saudi Arabia to see what's going to happen and how it's going to be received. Quite exciting, actually.
Yeah, interesting that we spoke a little bit earlier to a filmmaker and peace activist, a guy by the name of Shloimeh Zions, and as a Hasidic Jew, he's traveled to a lot of these places, and his comment was very, very similar to yours, that Bahrain is almost like the little brother of Saudi Arabia. It's connected by a bridge, and it's almost like Saudi Arabia uses Bahrain to kind of test the water a little bit. So it is quite interesting that we are starting that we're starting to see this move. How do you think South Africa is going to react? Because I mean, when Israel, they announced, the UAE and Israel announced that agreement, Durko came out and said it's regrettable, of course, because you know, the sudden outbreaking of peace is not something the South African government clearly was going to get behind. And we've also seen Iran over the weekend, their big buds, they hanged the wrestler, the Olympic wrestler who was an activist as well, and amidst a terrible outcry, they hanged him. And now in this morning's news, there's reports that Iran has planned to assassinate America's ambassador to South Africa in retaliation for the assassination of Soleimani. So South Africa, I think, must be looking just a little bit, or should be looking a little bit embarrassed, considering their stance in international politics. Your thoughts?
Well, certainly. I think there was a stage where South Africa had a very, very important and decisive role. And I say the word decisive not lightly, had a decisive role to play in any type of a Middle Eastern settlement. Certainly in the era of Mandela, I think he could have been a key figure in reaching some type of a settlement over there. And unfortunately, we have spent, you know, all the goodwill, and it seems to be gone, and now we're operating behind the curve. I think we're choosing the wrong sides, and it's a pity we're actually choosing a side. South Africa was in a position non-aligned in that type of area, which was an important position for it to be. And it could have certainly played the game as the prime facilitator in coming to the fore in settling this type of thing. And I think we've done away with it now. We've chosen a side, and we've chosen a difficult path now to play any role in any future Middle East settlement, which is a great, great pity.
Do you think we're going to learn from it? I mean, do you think that there's the ability to actually take a look at it and say, hold on a minute, you know what, we've been a little... it's been a bit embarrassing. Can we fix this?
Well, I think when Ramaphosa came in, we saw a change. We were going to withdraw our ambassador from Israel, and we were going to kick out the Israeli ambassador from South Africa. I think that went quite... I think the Israelis still retain an ambassador here, and I think Ramaphosa somewhat backpedaled on the position that South Africa was taking at that stage. I'm not sure. I haven't got the latest update. I mean, you can fill me in with that. But I think nothing really happened. We maintained a sort of a status quo. And I don't know if we ever exchanged an ambassador back to Israel. No, but there seemed to have been a bit of a backward pedal. But the ANC seems to be at war with itself with this type of thing. I mean, they are different. You know, what the ANC loves to say is always is they are a broad church. They certainly are a broad church. You've got those within, and I don't know whether those within the ANC are being accommodated anymore with a viewpoint of being pro-Israel, but they have a broad church where there are so many views about Israel within the ANC, and they seem to be fighting amongst themselves about it. Certainly they're not scared to admonish somebody who takes a position of supporting Israel. I mean, they'll come out there and they'll admonish some of the premier people in South Africa if they take that position.
Yeah,
it's an unfortunate position, Howard. I mean, we could have a role to play, and that's what upsets me quite a lot, is that we, you know, to play a role, you've got to be seen as a fair player, you've got to be seen as a facilitator, you've got to be seen as somebody who doesn't take sides. And certainly from a position that we were in 15 or even maybe 10 years ago, we were in a strong, strong position to be able to facilitate, given our history of facilitation with our own process over here. We had something to export. And we've done away with it, which is a pity.
It is indeed. Unfortunately, we do need to leave it there. It is 8:48. Major David Katz, thank you. Fascinating conversation. We'll catch you next week. And wishing you and your family a Shana Tova and a wonderful, healthy new year.